Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And time now for our play-by-play call of the day. That's the Vin Scully of Iceland with the call of the game winning goal against England yesterday.
We actually have a translation of that if you'd like.
That really is for the after show.
Okay.
Let's bring in somebody I can listen to anytime, anywhere, announce anything, and that is Merrill Reese. Merrill, my friend, welcome back. Great to have you with us. It may have been 5 years, but it was some 5 years with Buddy Ryan. We'll start in general. What stuck out to you about those 5 years?
Everything. The fact that you could go to practice any day and know that you were going to have something to talk about. He was going to say something that was totally and completely unexpected. He was unbelievable. He was there used to be a Reader's Digest column that people would write, and it was called "The Most Unforgettable Character I've Ever Met." Mine would be James David Ryan, without a doubt.
It was interesting. He comes into Philadelphia after the great run in Chicago as the defensive coordinator. And a lot of people don't realize, Merrill, it's not just what he did defensively in Philadelphia. He also transformed the offensive roster as well. I mean, if I recall, Ernest Jackson had back-to-back 1,000-yard years, and he said, nope, we're going in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. That's true. His first press conference, Steve, the question was, how long is it going to take to turn this thing around? And Buddy's response was, about 10 minutes. that was his answer.
And that's what the Philadelphia minutes. People needed to hear.
That's what they needed. But he was unbelievable. And, you know, I wanted him the first 3 months because I got nowhere with him. Every day I'd go to practice, and I'd say to him, I'd ask him a question. He'd look down at me like he never knew, never had seen me before. And this was after having gone to his mini camp, to his training camp, every practice, every day. And here I am, but looking at him, and he doesn't even know who I am. One day he walked over to me at practice, put his arm on my shoulder, and said, "Hey, Merle, how's your tennis?" Which was what I played at the time. And from that day on, it was as if I passed some kind of test. I don't know what the test was. But from that point on, I was his friend, and he told me everything, things that I couldn't believe that he told me about the owner, about the trade. I mean, I was his confidant. He was great. I loved him.
It's interesting. What does it say to you about a guy that was 0-3 in the playoffs and is revered?
It says that he was the personification of the fan of the 700 level at Veterans Stadium who wished he could be on the sideline making faces at the Dallas Cowboys, knocking out opposing quarterbacks, and raising all kinds of cane.
All right, now here's the next one. Hey, the strike happened during that time, and they had replacement players. What was Buddy's attitude toward all of that?
Oh, he loved them. He absolutely loved them. He refused to get involved. He didn't coach them. I mean, that those three replacement games, Steve, they were a bunch of players who went out on the field and said, all right, how about if you block and you go long? Buddy did nothing. Buddy refused to coach them. They ran into each other. They collided in the huddle. They couldn't huddle properly. They were a mess. And you know what? When the regular players came back, they were ready to walk through hot coal for Buddy Ryan. He united that team like no coach could ever unite any team because he stood up for them during the strike. He said, you guys, stay out. Stay away. And that's what they did.
And then, of course, there's the with Dallas, which I think had put in a beat down on the Eagles. It may have been during the replacement game, wasn't it? And then all of a sudden, well, Buddy, yeah, the game, when he finally got his guys back, he ran a they thought it was a kneel down. He ran a pass play, and then Keith Byers scored from 1 yard out. The fans loved it.
Well, here's what happened. During the replacement games, one of them was in Dallas, and the Cowboys had a huge lead. And late in the game against the Eagles' ragamuffins, half the Cowboys, well, maybe not half, but a good portion of the Cowboys' team had crossed the picket line, and they were there. And Landry, even though they're way up, started sending these guys in. And they're just hammering the Eagles. And Buddy said, I will get you, in so many words. And that's what he did. When everything was back as business as usual, and the real Eagles played the real Cowboys, Eagles had the lead at the end, and with less than 20 seconds remaining, Buddy had Randall fake a kneel down, go deep to Mike Quick, who was interfered with at the goal line, and then had Byers take it in to rub some more sand in the Cowboys' wound.
And there's nothing like the look of Tom Landry in a fedora staring out watching this happen.
Well, I'm not sure if I ever saw any look that differentiated from any other look from Tom Landry. But it wasn't one of the rare times where he smiled.
Yeah. But in the 700 level at the Vet, they loved every second of it.
And the 600 and 500 and 400 too.
You got exactly. What about his eye for personnel? Merrill, what impressed you about his eye for personnel? Because he had to transform the roster.
Yeah, well, he made the proclamation the day before his first draft that we wouldn't touch Keith Byers because he's a medical reject, and then he drafted Keith Byers. And that was funny. he taught me a lot of things. He used to say durability is as important as ability. And I'll tell you a quick story, Steve. They had a guard by the name of Ken Reeves. And one summer, Ken Reeves, during training camp, fell ill with appendicitis and missed most of camp. And the next year, Ken Reeves was having a good camp, and he suffered a high ankle sprain, and he was out for a few weeks. And when he came back, Buddy called him over and said, Ken Reeves, we've just traded you to the Cleveland Browns. Now, Buddy, as much as I love Dick Vermeil, I would never go up to Dick Vermeil and question something that he did and tell him what I thought. I would never say that to Ray Rhodes or to Andy Reid. But Buddy loved to be challenged. So I walked over and I said, Buddy, why did you get rid of Ken Reeves? And Buddy said, because he's always hurt. I said, what do you mean he's always hurt? An appendicitis and a high ankle sprain are completely different. Buddy said, now you listen to me. If a cow has a calf, and that calf runs out into the meadow one night and jumps over a barbed wire fence and gets struck dead by a 10-wheeler, and that cow has another calf, and that calf runs out into the meadow one night and gets struck dead by lightning, you shoot the blankety-blank cow. And that was Buddy's philosophy.
What was it like for you to have how much did it benefit the broadcast and the listener that even though you had this trust between the two of you, but how much did it benefit the broadcast and the listener that you had that kind of trust with Buddy Ryan?
Well, it had to help where there's information that you could wisely impart. I wouldn't say that Buddy go on the air and say, "Hey, Buddy told me this guy can't move to his left."
Right.
But we could mention that. Boy, it appears that he made us smarter. He made us smarter, as opposed to Chip Kelly, who his longest conversation with me was coming up the aisle after that Thanksgiving win in Dallas a couple of years ago, the highlight. That was a great game. And I walked up on the plane, and everybody was euphoric, and I walked up to where Chip Kelly was sitting, and I said, "Coach, great job. This was really a fun job, fun game to broadcast." And he looked over for 3/8 of a second and said, "Thanks," and turned his head back. That was one of my longer conversations with Chip.
Yeah.
Chip was I don't want to say he was the anti-Buddy because he didn't seem to get along with the front office either, but Chip Kelly did not have communication skills, and Buddy was all about communication.
Obviously, a fun 5 years. When did you get a sense with that team that, and we talked about the strike and so forth and what he did to galvanize his players, but when did you really get a sense like, you know what, this guy really knows what he's doing? I see the direction. Was it right away or did it take a little bit for you to see it?
At first I thought he was nuts, but getting rid of guys and having Randall Cunningham run on third down, pulling Jaworski. But by the second year, you could see, by the end of the first year, you could see this team coming together. And then they took off. I mean, you could see it by the end of the first year that he really did know what he was talking about. I mean, he loved Jerome Brown. But, oh, my goodness, would he scream at Jerome Brown. He called Jerome Brown every name that you could possibly think of. He screamed at Jerome Brown. If that had been Kotite, Jerome Brown would have sent him to the moon. Buddy screamed at him, and Jerome Brown went, "Ah, Buddy, you know I love you." He had such an ability to communicate with the tough, young African-American player. It was amazing. He got through to everybody, but these guys just... He was a father figure to so many of these players.
Merrill, enjoyed it very, very much. Appreciate the perspective on what was really a great era for the Eagles. It's interesting that Andy Reid got him to a Super Bowl, Dick Vermeil got him to a Super Bowl, yet you somehow feel that it's Buddy Ryan that endeared himself to the fan base.
Well, he did. Now, people say, does he remain the most popular coach in Eagles history? And the answer to that, Steve, is no. The most popular coach in Eagles history is Dick Vermeil, because Dick Vermeil had a couple of stops in St. Louis and Kansas City, but he always comes back here and he lives here, and he's on the billboards for Blue Cross, and he's on television commercials, and he makes appearances, and he's on the air. He is the longest running favorite coach ever. To a whole generation of fans who were born later, they don't even remember Buddy Ryan. But to those who were here when Buddy Ryan prowled the sidelines, boy, it was special. It was different, and it was always fun.
Well, hopefully there'll be more fun for the Eagles starting this season with, obviously, a new era kicking into gear. Merrill, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes of time on this sad day with the loss of Buddy Ryan, and we appreciate you as always.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's always a pleasure, and it's fun to speak with you. Take care. Have a great day.
The great Merrill Reese. We don't use the word great lightly. You know, the NFL Network, Sean, you know, they do their NFL's top 10 running backs, top 10 quarterbacks. Do you realize they did one that was top 10 announcers? And I believe the number one spot went to Pat Summerall and John Madden as a team. And Al Michaels is in there and others. Merrill was at number 7.
Season 39 as the voice of the Eagles.
Yeah, this is 30. Yeah, but think about that for a moment. Right, the NFL did its top 10, and Summerall and Madden were, you know, they put them as a team as a one. And Al Michaels is on this list. I think Cosell is on this list, whatever. I mean, it's one national guy after another. Merrill Reese is on the list at 7. I think there are two local radio guys on the list. Myron Cope is the other one. What does that tell you? They talked about his passion, how he paints a picture. It's very special. And, of course, you hear him on Eagle 107 every Sunday with Mike Quick. We will come back with more in a moment. Dick Hort at the bottom of the hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Celebrate your freedom from high prices and payments at Sunbury Motors Ford. It's the Ford Freedom Sales Event. Now, freedom to save and freedom to choose. Drive into the July 4th holiday in a new Ford from Sunbury Motors Ford. It's the best time of the year to celebrate your freedom from high prices and high payments. How does freedom from interest sound? SMC has 0% financing available for up to 72 months, plus $1,000 smart bonus cash on most models. Freedom to choose. At SMC, there is 0% financing for up to 72 months on Ford Fusion, Focus, and Escape. 0% up to 60 months on Explorer, Edge, F-150, and Super Duties. There's also great lease rates on the full lineup of Ford. Kick off your July 4th celebration early with a new Ford in your driveway during the Ford Freedom Sales Event at Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. Freedom to save and freedom to choose now at SMC.
You should have seen the suit dancing to this in the hallway today.
Great Lenny Kravitz song.
Oh, I used to be until I saw him dancing to it. Wakeman's in the back. Wakeman might be my best fan right now. So, she loved the play-by-play call of the day, didn't she?
Thought someone was getting killed. Obviously, she's not been watching Euro 2016. We'll fill her in during the break.
That call, I referred to him as the Vin Scully of Iceland.
That was great. They're probably calling him that, too, there. You kidding me?
I mean, look, Kirk Gibson hits the home run off Dennis Eckersley in game one of the 88 World Series, right? And, you know, and Vin Scully, typical, he says, you know, deep to right field, and she is gone. And then he says, in the year of the impossible, the improbable has happened. Well, that's not that call. That's okay. The Iceland guy, his call, no. This is not a do you believe in miracles moment from Al Michaels, or in a year of the impossible, the improbable has happened from Vin Scully. No. Play just a part of it again if you've got it on the computer there.
Yeah, we can get it here.
Yeah, because this is the goal that puts Iceland in front. Now, obviously, we don't have a translation of this. But is a translation needed when a guy does this? And the Shamokin Dam Orchestra interrupts a moment. But originally, Sean had up, what is it, one of the Chris Bryan home runs?
Yeah, the third home run from last night.
Yeah, which is, you know, a great moment in the whole thing.
Sure.
But I'm sorry. A person that sounds like they should be going to a facility. I mean, if I ever did that, you people would farm me out. It sounded like somebody calling a Shikalimi touchdown. Oh, stop laughing. Between you and Wakeman. Come on.
Walk off.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports Bozo of the Day, General Manager of Vancouver Canucks. Yeah, we'd like to sign this guy, that guy, this guy, that guy. We want to sign Steven Stamkos. We want to sign P.K. Subban. It's not July 1st yet, man. You can't talk about that. Hey, by the way, the list of people not going to the Olympics grew today when Jason Day said no. What's more impressive, people? The number of people who have said that they won't go or the number of people that will go? This is turning into a Kevin Herr Rio nightmare.
Yeah, he doesn't talk to me about it as much. Wonder why.
That's because there's nobody going. All right, very pleased to bring in one of our local legends, Dick Hort, who had the privilege of playing for Buddy Ryan. Dick, welcome. It is great to hear you back on our airwaves.
It's nice to be here. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing well. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing real good. I'm learning to walk again, but it's happening.
That's great. That is great. Well, your commentary, they did an awesome job last season, but your commentary is always missed. So,
well, thank you.
All right. Buddy Ryan, you hear about him being a player's coach. Does that describe your experience with Buddy Ryan?
It depends what kind of a player you were.
Okay. If you're Dick Hort, how was he?
Oh, he was fine. He was fine. I was a defensive signal caller. I was a linebacker. And he had a rule. He would call the defenses from the sidelines with hand signals. And I had the option of overriding his rule if I thought it would be prudent to do so. But he always left me know, if you change what I called and you screw up, you're going to pay the price. So needless to say, there were not many calls that he sent in that I changed. he was a player's coach if you were a player. If in college, where I played for him, you know, Merle Reese talked about he would send a guy if he got hurt and he didn't like it because he got hurt. He would send him out of town. He'd trade him or something. Well, in college, you can't do that. All right? You're going to be stuck with that guy who's on scholarship who is not going to play for you for the next 4 years. And he was not a player's coach to those guys. He was actually pretty rude and crude. I was back to a reunion about 4 years ago, and one of the guys was there that had the year before Buddy came had been a pretty important part of the program, and he got hurt a couple times and he fell behind, and he had nothing good to say about Buddy, because a few years before they had brought Buddy back to one of those reunions, and like Merle said, everybody loved him. All the players that played loved the guy, but you didn't want to get in the wrong side of him or you were in big trouble.
You were in college at the time, and I always feel that the really good college coaches are not only, you know, they get the best out of you as a player, they're a great strategist, but they also impart other things to you. They become life changers. Was he a life changer, or was he just a football coach?
He was a life changer in that he made you realize that hard work and perseverance were going to win out over time. You know, Merle, I heard Merle Reese make that statement about he valued durability over ability. I wouldn't carry it quite that far, but if you were able to play, if you were durable, if you had a little nagging injury and you were able to go out there and persevere and put in the game time and play well, he loved you. And he left you know it. But if you didn't, if you had that turned ankle and you wanted to stay on the sidelines and not get in the game, he didn't have much time for you. and he let it be known.
Was he the kind of guy that would pull you aside with a life lesson here or there?
Not really. Not really. Not that way. He left you know where you stood in different ways. We were playing a team. I was a snapper, and I never made a bad snap in all my junior high, high school, and college career up to that point. In this particular game, we're punting the ball from the 45-yard line. I snap the ball over the punter's head, and it's recovered by the other team on the 2 or 3 yard line, and they take it in and score. I come running off the field. Buddy said, "Dickie boy," he said, "get your head up." He said, "That'll happen to everybody now and again." A little while later, we have the ball again. We got a punt. I snap it over the punter's head again. It goes into the end zone. They recover it for a touchdown. And as I run off the field, he grabs me by the jersey, gets in my face, and he says, "There ought to be a law against one man hating another man as much as I hate you." he was a character. And, you know, I saw him on television the night that he got in the fight with the offensive coordinator from Houston.
Kevin Gilbride.
And I saw him get in fights with our own coaches in film sessions. And, for example, a defensive back made a wrong decision. He didn't make the decision that he said should have made within the defense we were playing. And maybe the defensive back coach would say, "Now there was some room for error there. He had to make a decision, and boy, Buddy would get up and get in that guy's face, and there was no gray area with Buddy Ryan. It was black or white. You did it right or you didn't do it. You know, there was no gray area."
Was, you know, obviously the 85 Bears were a special defense, so personnel met coaching. Did you consider him to be a strategic genius?
He was fantastic. He believed in putting pressure on the opposing quarterback. Now, we didn't throw the ball in those days as much as they do now, but he wanted to go after people. He wanted to be aggressive. It wasn't bend but not break. It was, let's go get them and make something happen. And then he was here in Danville with me. He came down to see me, played golf up at Frosty Valley Country Club. That was after he was with the Jets, and they won the Super Bowl in 69 with Namath. And he said, "What do you learn from Webb Eubank," who was a Hall of Fame pro coach, "was that in football, especially in the NFL, the hardest thing for an offensive coordinator to do is to protect the quarterback. And the more concerned you have the offense be about protecting that quarterback, the more effective your defense is going to be." And that's when he came up with all this stuff that came, you know, where the perfect storm met with the Chicago Bears. Where they went after the quarterback with all those great players, and just, I don't know if you've ever seen any of those tapes of those on the NFL Network of that defense, but it was just,
oh, sure,
just unbelievable, the hits they put on the big time quarterbacks. And that's what he was all about, and that's what he wanted to do, and that's what that defense was predicated on. A lot of man to man defense, and the linebackers went after people.
Well, you can play man to man when you've got personnel in the front seven like Otis Wilson, Mike Singletary, Steve McMichael, Richard Dent, and so forth. You know, you can play more man-to-man when you've got that kind of front seven personnel, and he took advantage of his front seven personnel because he can man up on the outside.
Absolutely. He was from that point, I learned a tremendous amount of football. I would say in my career, I had great coaches at every level, but I learned the most football from Buddy Ryan. He was just tremendous. And you know, he could teach you. He could get it across. And like I said, if you were a player and if you did it his way, you were okay. But if not, you know, there was another place for you too. Our team thought so much of him. You know, he was from Oklahoma and he was a big Texas fan. He coached in high school in the Texas area, and every away game when we'd fly somewhere to play, he'd come to the airport and he'd have a big Stetson hat on. Well, after that happened one time, everybody on that 40-man roster that was going to fly for that game, we all had a Stetson hat. Everyone on that team, they thought that much of him.
Wow, that's impressive. What did you, as you sat back and you watched the various levels he went to, what was just your thought process? Now, by the way, one quick Penn State connection. By the way, you mentioned with the Jets, Ralph Baker from Penn State and from Lewistown was on that Jets team at linebacker that played for Buddy
right.
in that Super Bowl. What was it like for you watching as your own life and career progresses to then watch on TV to see how Buddy's life and career progressed?
Well, I thought that he's always gotten criticized. He was a great defensive coach, but he couldn't when he was a head coach get the offenses to be as good. Well, that's bull, because if you're going to be a good defensive coach, you have to be able to understand offenses. And I don't understand, as good as those teams were in Philadelphia with Randall Cunningham, I don't understand how he couldn't get him over the top. But he was loved in Philadelphia. When he was down in Philadelphia, I went down there and spent a day with him. And, I mean, a lot. That particular day, for some reason, there were at least four or five players there from the Chicago Bears team, the 85 Bears team. And to a man, they're coming up there with their wives, their kids, their grandmothers, and everybody is hugging and loving Buddy Ryan. And he just had a way. He was kind of a curmudgeon, but he had a way to get across to people that he was on your side. And if you did it his way and you worked hard and you persevered, you were going to be successful.
Well, as Merrill pointed out, and correctly, the 87 strike team, the three replacement games, he's like, okay, fine. And he just kind of sat back, did nothing. He told his team in mass, do not cross the picket line, stay out.
Yeah.
And they loved him forever for that.
Yeah. Yeah. He could be cruel. We were out practicing one day, and it was a wet day, and it was still warm outside, and there were some night crawlers and earthworms crawling around on the ground. And one of the guys that was not in the drill that was going on picked up one of these night crawlers and stuck it down another guy's back, and the guy that had the worm on him was jumping around and squealing. And Buddy looked over at the guy that had put the worm in the back, and he said, "What are you doing, Riley? Playing with your relatives?" You know, he could stick you in the back every once in a while too, but he was beloved there in Buffalo.
Is there something, Dick, that he either said or that you were taught through him that you feel like you carry on today?
I do every when I coach linebackers at Susquehanna and at Chickahominy, I did everything the way Buddy Ryan taught me. I mean,
interesting.
I watch games every weekend and I see the what's going on, and I know how the coaching has changed over the years, how different aspects of coaching has changed, how you key backs and so forth. And still, the teams that are successful are the teams that do things basically the way that Buddy Ryan taught us to do them.
Amazing. Amazing. Dick, thanks so much. Any final thoughts you wanted to impart about Buddy Ryan that maybe people didn't know about him?
He was a great coach. Like I said, if you were a player, He was on your side. He was with you. But at our level, if you were one of those guys that just filled out the roster, you know, a lot of those guys did not care a whole lot for him.
Well, he had no use for those guys.
No, he didn't have any use for them, and they were basically dummies in drills and so forth.
Yeah, he had no. You know, if you did not have the chance to be productive, you were of no use to Buddy.
Right.
Fair enough?
That's correct.
Yep. So, Dick, thanks so much. It is great to hear you on our air again, and glad to hear you're doing so well. It's great to have you.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Nice to be here.
You bet. Dick Hort joining us. Played for Buddy Ryan at Buffalo. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the show in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. You want to know what I thought the best part of the Merrill Reese interview was? The part where he related his longest conversation with Chip Kelly. That was some game. That was great.
Thanks.
Yep, that's exactly the kind of guy you want to run through a wall for. Wow. That's brutal. You know what? But that's the part that struck me. But a tough day. Pat Summitt, who changed her sport in more ways than I realize, I think, along the way. Because it's a sport that needed a Pat Summitt when it got a Pat Summitt. Helped put the sport on the national map, national sense of consciousness about it. And under Buddy Ryan, who... very few people in today's culture. Now, going 0-3 in the playoffs did cost him his job. But going 0-3 in the playoffs and yet still feel like an enduring and endeared figure in Philadelphia. Really? Yet he is. And always will be. The comments he made, how colorful he was, his way of doing things, but was also in a lot of ways, a football savant. Never the fun ones to do. Buddy Ryan at least was 82. And incidentally, Buddy Ryan lost his second wife, Joni, and he was married to her, since 1970 or 71 or 68 or 69, something like that. So he was married to her for a long time. I mean, almost 50 years. She had a long, hard battle with Alzheimer's as well. And of course, Pat Summitt with Alzheimer's. And I'll tell you, Tyler Summitt, when it comes to dealing with this cruel, cruel disease, I've walked a mile in his shoes. When it comes to dealing with the cruel disease as a son. And it is cruel. Every life-threatening disease has its own cruelty. But there is, but Alzheimer's brings with it, as I've told you a couple times on the show, including today, you feel like the loved one has died twice. The first time when you sit there and they don't know who you are, and the second time when they actually do pass away. It's hard on them because as time goes, they lose confidence. They don't understand what's happening to them. They can't remember what they used to remember. And then gradually the fade away begins. And then it's obviously for the caretaker, it's an impossible task filled with love. And every day for the caretaker, extremely, extremely hard. So my advice is this. If you know someone who is a caretaker, give them a break once in a while. Figure out a way to get them out just to give them a couple of hours of fresh air, slice of life. Caretakers are immersed in being the caretaker, and they're going through their own brand of awful. Pat Summitt, though, impacted her sport more than any other. Buddy Ryan impacted a lot of areas.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.